For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with Republican political consultant Neva Hill. And sitting in for Ryan Kiesel this week is former State House Speaker Steve Lewis. Welcome. Glad to have you guys here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
The bipartisan Oklahoma Death Penalty Review Commission called on the state to keep its ban on executions as it released a 300-page finding over 2 years with about four dozen recommendations. Meanwhile, the very next day, newly appointed Attorney General Mike Hunter says while he respects the commission, he disagrees with the findings and the state is moving forward with executions. Speaker Lewis, I'm going to throw it you in the deep end here. What did you think about this news?
I thought it was I looked at the report last night. I hadn't had a chance to really, I think it just came out, but it was pretty thoughtful, thorough study that had lasted for quite a while, and it made some very good points. I think that more than anything else, it was sort of an indictment on our whole process in criminal justice in many ways. It questioned a lot of forensic evidence. It questioned eyewitness identifications. It questioned just the practices that have been traditional in our system. And, of course, those things are present in any case. It doesn't have to be a capital case. You can have a misidentification. You can have bias and bad decision making by the parties in the system, but of course it's a lot more important when it's a death penalty, and you end up with a mistake. And I think they point out that there's really no doubt that there have been mistakes, and that innocent people have been executed. And of course, there's no do over for that. So. It's pretty important.
Neva, your thoughts?
I think I would agree with Stephen that this was a very comprehensive report. I think when you look at it and the level of detail and how they really not only delved into the single issue of the protocols on the death penalty, how it would be implemented and recommendations and problems seen, it looked at a lot in those 40-some-odd recommendations and 300 pages. It addressed a lot of other issues. I think you're right. Systemically, it talked about the fact that they have this tremendous backlog with the public defenders, not enough ability for funding reasons and other reasons to be able to really have all of the elements available, expert witnesses, investigators, all of the things that would come into play in the process. And then, you know, I think of some of the ideas that were put forward, such as that the lawyers working in the indigent defense system really should be, their pay should be commensurate with those on the other side of the table on the prosecutor side. A lot of those things that have been talked about before, but when you get them in one comprehensive document, I think it sets the stage for a lot more conversation. You know, the other side of that with the Attorney General, yeah, and where he's coming from, I think, again, there has been historically different views of the person that's been in the AG, you know, in that position. And I think in this instance, Attorney General Hunter has kind of carved out where he is on this, and certainly will be something that I think that will come into play not only from a legislative standpoint, but certainly in the campaign next year.
Oh, Steve, were you surprised by the AG saying that we're still going to go ahead and go forward with the executions?
No, not at all. I think he almost had to do that. If you look at the report, as I say, it's so broad and sweeping as far as the faults that it points out in the system that I think his job is to defend the system, and that's what he almost had to do. One of the things that sort of shows how almost impossible it would be to wait until all of these things have been done is the training it calls for. It basically talks about training for prosecutors, training for defense attorneys, training for judges in understanding forensics and understanding the biases that people come to a courtroom with and dealing with those in each case. And, you know, those are things that almost call for a for a perfect system, and I don't know how you could wait until those things actually happen. But we do have to work toward it, and we have to be very mindful, and especially in the death penalty cases.
Governor Fallon is creating a task force to investigate untested rape kits in Oklahoma. She says with no statewide tracking system in place, only a fourth of kits are tested. Neva, this move is getting support from both sides of the aisle here.
I think so, and it clearly, I mean, it really it came forward from Senator Kay Floyd's bill that it became an executive order by the governor, and I think it does show that this is one of those issues that clearly it's not a partisan issue. It's an issue that needs to be addressed. It's a serious issue, long overdue for focus. And I think when you see the statistics, when you see the fact that you only have two counties that are doing their own, Oklahoma and Tulsa County, the two largest, but leaving the OSBI with the burden of having to deal with all of the other testing, then it snowballs into all of these other problems that come along with it. So, I applaud the governor, I applaud Senator Floyd and all of the others that have stepped forward to, push this and then the folks that will be on that task force that will be, will have a real duty and responsibility to take it very seriously.
Speaker Lewis.
No, I'd have to agree 100%. I have to admit I was shocked to learn that such a huge percentage, apparently, of rape kits may not be being tested. And I just had naturally assumed that if the law enforcement took a rape kit that they – sent it in and it got tested. And I had no idea that didn't always happen.
Well, and I think it will be important that these local police and sheriff's departments do follow what's being prescribed, that by the end of the year they, in fact, do the audit, get that information in, and that will allow for things to continue to move forward, and ultimately next summer that they'll see the report come back to the governor.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of these women, they deserve to get some kind of a justice, and it's nothing's being done.
In fact, one of the leading advocates is someone who has been involved with this issue for approaching 40 years, so someone who was a victim herself.
So we have just 4 weeks left in the legislative session. Wow, we're almost three quarters of the way through. Still, we have no budget, even though the state is facing a nearly $900 million shortfall. While there's been a lot of talk over revenue increasing measures, there doesn't appear to be any major movement. Speaker Lewis, do you see any chance of something getting done maybe in the next couple of weeks? How long do you think it's going to be?
It's got to.
Yeah, well, that's right.
I think... I know that there's a lot of effort going in to trying to find a solution right now. I it should have probably started much earlier, but who knows whether it has been or not, what's been going on behind closed doors. So much of these budget negotiations do occur behind closed doors, and that's one of the problems that we have. It seems that always the leadership comes out with a proposal right toward the end of the session, and everyone's either ecstatic or horrified, and it's not usually a majority that's ecstatic, and so it takes several missteps before you get there, and they run out of time, and that's what happened last year. They just waited until the last minute to make a proposal, and it was too late. So I think they're maybe a little bit earlier this year. They started out a little earlier. They were supposed to announce put their cards on the table earlier this week. Hadn't happened yet. Whether it'll happen today or not, we don't know.
Yeah, and we're still trying to get word of some of the major things, cigarette taxes, gross production tax, gas tax, that kind of thing. Those things are still on the table. We just don't know what's going to happen with them.
And I think that's right. I think no one knows what's going to happen, and it's going to come down to the wire, unfortunately. And this time, I mean, given some of the conversations going on at the Capitol, it may in fact set the stage where the governor calls the lawmakers back into special session. session. I mean, she seems to be indicating that if certain things don't happen from her perspective on the budget, that that is definitely something that she's going to leave as an option. So, you know, I think the speaker's right. I mean, whichever party is the majority, I mean, there's always that element of how do you get your own folks in line and how do you come up with a consensus, which clearly is the first big task. But when you're trying to accomplish that internally and not reaching across the aisle and trying to build some bridges to where when votes are needed on whatever matter, particularly when it gets down to the budget crunch, it's very problematic. And then you've got the age-old problem of the Senate versus the House and the fact that everyone kind of with glee says that they're never going to agree and they're always going to fight. But it doesn't make for good policymaking. It certainly makes for a horrible budget process. And I think we're seeing that play out once again this year.
And something you didn't have to deal with, Speaker, is that they've got to get 3/4 of a vote to raise any kind of revenue as far as increasing taxes.
Right, which automatically means that you've got to have both Democrats and Republicans support whatever revenue raising plan that you have. And that takes compromise. And right now, I guess the majority Republicans are feeling that they have to get their proposal together amongst their caucus first to get as many votes as they can. But it doesn't seem that there's been a lot of talk with the Democrats yet. And knowing that you have to have some Democratic votes, it seems like that they would go ahead and make that move. And the Democrats, of course, are trying to make their presence known through their debates and their press releases and so forth. But there's really no substitute for people getting together in the same room and not walking out until they've come to an agreement.
Until they decide on something. Meanwhile, today is the deadline for bills to be out of the opposing chamber. I just wanted to get your thoughts on bills which may or may not have made it through so far. Neva, let's start with you.
Well, I think there's not been a lot of surprises. I mean, there's been a lot of the typical bills that we see. I mean, if you want to categorize them by pro-life or pro-gun or, you know, all of these different bills. And there have been a flurry of bills that have come up at the end that I think people have been somewhat surprised were even up for a vote. I think there was an expectation that some of this would kind of be set aside and there would be more focus on the budget and less on kind of some of these issues that can become sensationalized and polarizing, which compounds the problem for everything else that they're trying to do. So I think it's regrettable that, and it really kind of goes back to the discussion that we've had for years. It makes for a pretty strong discussion point about having the budget process every other year where we get past some of this and we really can more seriously get into the area of budgeting. And I think along with that, you know, what was mentioned, the fact that even in the caucus, even when you look at these numbers, when you have certain segments of lawmakers who right up front are saying absolutely no taxes, no taxes, period. I mean, you've got a stage set where it's a slippery slope. I mean, because it's become a really hard divide. And I think that's where, for Republicans, there has to be that balance of where's the cuts if we're going to have the increases. And I mm-hmm. think, you know, it's not a either or. It's got to be some blend of both. And I think that's what we're not really seeing in a lot of these details that are coming out right now.
Speaker Lewis.
I don't think this year's been a year of big problem solving, frankly. I mean, I just don't see any big things that the legislature have been able to take on. I think it's mainly because almost anything you try to do costs some money.
That's right.
And if you introduce a bill that's going to cost anything, the leadership tells you you're not going to get a hearing on it, and they can't because they don't have the money. I think what could set up as a good year would be the criminal justice reform mm-hmm. measures that the governor has tried to show some leadership with and has shown leadership with. I think she has changed by her willingness to step out front on that, has changed the context or the atmosphere where it is permissible to consider things that would be in another time considered maybe soft on crime or something like that, which I don't really see it that way. And she uses the term smart on crime, and I think she's right. But it looks like that is not going to get – a lot of that's not going to get done this year either, perhaps. I don't know. It's too early to say. But when you get into the legislative process, I mean, you have strong squeeze points where people that have strong feelings can stop things. And unless you've really put your program together in such a way that you can get around those squeeze points, things get stopped. And that may be what's happening mm-hmm. this year.
Now, over the past week, the number of official candidates jumping into statewide races in 2018 nearly quadrupled. We had one at first, and now we have four. We have House Democratic Leader Scott Inman and Tulsa lawyer Gary Richardson for governor, and one Scott Inman, of course, Democrat, and Tulsa Gary Richardson, a Republican, and former state Republican Party Chairman Matt Pinnell for lieutenant governor. Speaker Lewis, any surprises on that list so far?
I'm not as familiar with the Republican side. Matt Pinnell apparently is a really I know he was a party chairman and a well thought of young man, and has been involved in national politics. So it's not a surprise that he would want to come back home and start his career in politics. Gary Richardson, I was surprised to see him jump in at this stage of his life. Frankly, it's something obviously he's always wanted to do. By golly, he's going to do it. I have, and he could be a dangerous candidate for, there's some very good examples of people that have been elected that who were thought to have no chance in the beginning. And Gary is one of those candidates that's not got a lot of experience in state government, so he can pretty much say what he wants to say and in his mind be telling the truth, even though to people that know it probably makes no sense. But that's not exactly where the voters are either sometimes. So I wouldn't count anybody out at this stage. On the Democratic side, Scott Inman, I think, without a doubt, will be a good candidate. I mean, I don't know whether he'll win or not. Depends on who else jumps in. But Scott's very articulate, very smart. And believe it or not, I think he is pretty mainstream as far as political tides are concerned.
Yeah, Neva, what do you think about these candidates?
Well, I think it's where we expected to be at this point. I mean, we're nearing the end of session, getting to the summertime where these candidates have to be out. Mm-hmm. They have to make the decision. It's all of the flirting with it and speculation kind of reaches a point where when folks start getting in to the campaign, really the campaign flow, they start talking to party leaders, they start getting out on the campaign trail. It ups the timetable for everyone. You've got to really fish or cut bait at that point. The money starts to be a factor. Who gets to whom first, and starts asking and raising money. And then you have all of these wild cards. The more crowded a primary field. I mean, Scott Inman, Connie Johnson. You throw in a Drew Edmondson. You know, who's still being widely speculated could be in this race, and other names on the Republican side. I don't think, obviously Todd Lamb, even though he hasn't officially said he's in, everyone expects that the campaign has started some time ago, just hasn't kind of made that official point. And once people preempted that, I think now he has to perhaps, whether that was his timeline to do it after session or at what point, I think we will see some real interesting things happen. I mean, even in the secondary races where, by and large, I think we'll have crowded primaries on both sides. I mean, when you have open seats, whether it's in the legislature or statewide office, and someone expects that this is their opportunity, they have to decide whether or not they really want to go for it. And there are a lot of terming out lawmakers and mm-hmm. folks that were recently termed out that are certainly looking at a lot of these positions. So I think it'll be fascinating. But I think to the speaker's point about the fact that when you get kind of a wild card candidate, I mean, here's Gary Richardson, 76 years old, self-funded in 2002, his independent campaign for governor, ran for Congress, you know, years before that in the first district, someone who has kind of politically always been in the fray, but has a message that is somewhat kind of the outside the box Trump type message, that whether the voters are going to respond as well next election cycle as they did to that in Oklahoma in this past cycle, it remains to be seen. I think a lot of that is predicated on the backdrop of what's happened at the state capitol and whether the folks are really tuned in and how much and how angry they are with what's happened or not happened and how they've been affected by it.
And certainly the all but, because of state law, new state law, the all but two of the statewide offices are term limited. So that's a lot of open seats statewide when you look at labor commissioner, because actually three seats are not because of labor commissioner, attorney general, and education. But insurance commissioner, lieutenant governor, auditor, all these positions are open. So that really opens up the race for 2018.
Oh, it really does. And, you know, that sneaked up on me. I didn't realize till a while back that had even happened, to be honest. But, I grew up in Oklahoma where people sort of settled into these secondary offices. it really wasn't too competitive for quite a while. But, and I don't know whether it's good or bad. You know, we've tried to control our elective politics with these term limits, but there are really only a few people who really want to serve in elected office and who are willing to go out and put their name on the dotted line, and those people usually like to stick around. And so instead of people staying in one office, or as Neva said, people jumping from office to office, and so I'm not sure what that has accomplished, but anyway, that's what we've got.
There we go. And Speaker Lewis and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of KOSU, its staff, or management.